My guess is that you've probably been on Facebook sometime today, right? If you haven't, you are definitely one of the minority. I know Facebook is almost like a drug, almost like an addiction like crack today for a lot of us. And I know for me, it takes a little bit of effort sometimes to pull myself away and to not do it, even as much so as I've had to download an application on my computer called Facebook Feed Eradicator. To make it so when I go to my Facebook, I can't see my Facebook news feed, so I don't get lost in that trap, you know. So I just engage in content that I want to, and I don't get distracted. Also, on my cell phone, I've had to take off the app off my phone. And even go as far as having my wife put in the password so I cannot go on the website at all on my cell phone so I can really gain focus. Now, that's because I don't have very good discipline with that. But there's some amazing, amazing things about Facebook. And the reason I bring this up is our guest today is one of the guys I like crazy look forward to seeing his posts when I do see them on my cell phone when I bring it up on there. Because sometimes I do trip it up and I trick my wife into giving me the password and then I unlock it and then I'm back in there for another month or two. Anyway, Daniel is like prolific on Facebook and he doesn't do anything special, honestly. He's not doing anything these wild, wacky tactics or techniques. He's just creating really cool and engaging posts on his Facebook page on a very consistent basis as a real estate investor. And I see them almost every day. And almost every day, they make me stop and I look at them. And the cool thing is, guys and gals, these aren't just like pictures of cats and they're not just pictures of, you know, wacky stuff like that or, hey, you know, buy this property from me. He's really creating value and really engaging. You can tell he's selling a lot of properties, selling a lot of houses. I just hit my microphone with my hand there. Sorry. He's selling a lot of houses through Facebook. Okay. He is one of the biggest house sellers as far as investment property sellers in the Baltimore, Maryland market. He is also going into the Florida market. And on this Carrot Cast, he's going to walk you through why he is also going into the Florida market. And he's going to walk you through what he's doing to close so many deals in Baltimore. If I believe the number he mentioned to me, the latest is that he's on pace to close already over 100 deals so far this year. I believe that was the number. I might be doubling it. It might have been over 100 this year total, you know, up through the end of the year is what they're on pace for. But whatever it is, they're closing a lot of deals, guys and gals. And they're doing it for a reason. You know, they've got a machine going. They're using Carrot. They're a Carrot client. They're getting so many cash buyer leads and selling them on the website. But it's mainly what he's doing to do two things. How is he getting his website ranked really well to attract people who want to buy investment properties in a very competitive market? He's going to go into that in this Carrot Cast. Also, what is he doing on Facebook? What are those kind of creative, simple things that you can do that really engage a person on Facebook and get those people to come from looking at the cat video to coming and buying a property from you, okay? Daniel's insanely good at this stuff in addition to a lot of other stuff. He's got a great background, and he's going to walk you through his background, how he came from finance, how he came from his background and started in one way, in one technique of investing in real estate and now does a few others. He owns a lot of properties. He does a lot of owner finance. He picks up a lot of properties at the tax deed sales, and he just really has a machine going. I think you're going to enjoy listening to what he's got going. And without further ado, I'm going to welcome in Daniel, but before I do, go over to carrotcast.com and give us a rating. Okay. Let us know how you guys like this. The ratings are what fuel, more people to come across this podcast. The ratings are the best way to say thank you for time well spent. Thank you for the investment that are making here at Carrot and that Daniel and our guests are making to come on and share this information with you. And it's the best thank you we can possibly get is by rating us on iTunes, and it helps us to spread our message out there far and wide so more people can benefit from it as well, so we can amplify more leaders to make their bigger impact in this world. So you are going to love this podcast. Welcome on in, Daniel.
The reason I got into real estate, or really any business for myself, was so that I could completely operate the whole thing in my bathrobe from my kitchen table.
Hey, so coming at you from Carrot headquarters here in Roseburg, Oregon, and we've got a quick tip call today, and we're going to call this the Carrot Cast, and the Carrot Cast is going to be coming at you
once a week, and we're going to be hitting you with active investors, people who are doing really consistent deals. They're turning profits. They're running real businesses. They're not just out there, you know, looking for the next opportunity and bouncing back and forth. They're people who are looking to grow a real business and earn real freedom from their business. And on today's call, you guys may have seen him on one of our previous blog posts. We had Daniel on for a case study, but I thought, shoot, let's get Daniel on again so we can spend a little bit of time diving into some of the more, you know, some of the details on what it is that makes Daniel's business tick. So we've got Daniel DiGiacomo with me on today's CarrotCast. And Daniel, welcome on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, Trevor. How are you?
Good, dude. And once again, thanks for hopping on me. And you are the first episode ever. So first of all, thanks for hopping on our schedule first. And also, dude, it's just going to be really cool digging into this because you and I were talking right before this about kind of the premise of this was going to be, and we'll work it out as we go, guys and gals. So if you guys are watching this or listening to this on iTunes or wherever you're listening to it, this is the first episode and we love feedback on it. But basically, these are going to be 20 to 25 minute podcasts, basically, and video podcasts where we're going to take and dive in with real active investors, going to pick 2 to 3 top tips from their business that are helping them to scale their business and or just make their business a lot more effective. And Daniel's crushing it. I know last year you did multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars last year. I'm doing a lot of note. Are you guys doing note buying? I know you guys are doing some note stuff, but it's mainly tax liens, right?
Yes, yeah, it's mostly tax liens, and maybe 10% of the business is default mortgage purchases.
Cool. So they've got a real business going, and like I said, guys and gals, it is their full-time income. How many people are on your team right now, whether it's employees or just people who are on their overall team to help you guys close deals?
5 employees and another dozen or so pretty active associates, if you will, that are sort of in and out of my office on a weekly basis.
Okay, and you guys are over in Baltimore and expanding soon down in the Florida market. Have you guys started to make that move yet, or are you guys still kind of plotting your entry into that market?
We've been plotting for a while now. I have 2 relatively decent sized portfolios that we're picking up this quarter, or I guess in a couple of days it will be next quarter. So in the next 60 days we'll have some pretty decent inventory in Florida, and that's pretty exciting for me.
I love it, man. So we're gonna dive into the 3 quick tips, and guys, what our main goal is here is I want you guys to grab a pen and pad, and these are things that are small bite sized chunks that you guys can implement in your business. Whether it's a mindset tweak that's working really well for the investor that's on this CarrotCast, whether it's an actual business strategy, whether it's an automation or marketing strategy, we're going to be covering it all. And we want you guys to grab these quick tips, put them in your business, put them into play, and come back to us the next week and let us know how they work in your business. So just to give people an idea of kind of where your business is, so they can kind of compare where they are and see where they are in their journey versus you. Approximately how many deals are you guys on pace to, or how many deals did you guys close last year? And what does it look like you guys are, going to do this year? I know it's really early in the year still, but what's your feeling there?
So we, right now, 2015, we closed about 117 deals here in Maryland. Mm-hmm. The first quarter, we've closed about 40 deals. So we're, I think I'm impressed with the growth. And, of course, like you mentioned, I've added several people to the team on a full-time capacity. So we're certainly growing. I'd love to do about 150 deals this year, so I don't think that will be a problem.
Well, cool, man. We're here for you. And one thing people are probably asking is how the heck are you getting these deals? We're gonna dive into part of your follow-up system here in a bit, and something that's working really well for you guys right now. We're going to dive into delegation. And as you've grown the business, as you guys have grown that cash flow and just the income from it, you guys have had to figure out how to get other people on board to help you guys grow. So we're going to give you some quick tips there. And then also mindset on managing the business, so you're not coming at it from a desperation side of things. So there's going to be our 3 quick tips, but we're going to dive in really cool there. Your leads for the 100 and some odd deals this last year, I know you're a Carrot member and you get a lot of your stuff there. Kind of what's your mix? You said you do about $2,500 a month or so now in direct mail. You're doing the online stuff. Kind of what's your mix percentage-wise of where your deals are coming from?
In terms of deals, first I think you have to understand that the bulk of our for sale inventory is owned in-house. It's our tax lien portfolio. So, cool. We're sitting on a lot of inventory that's for sale. For lack of a simpler way to describe it, we're selling a lot of what we own. So that's that. In terms of purely wholesale, you know, for sale by owner type stuff. Probably about 50% of leads come from direct mail, and the other 50% come from other means. Maybe 40% of, 40% in total comes from the web, and then another 10 or 12, 15% maybe come from something I talked to you about, just a text messaging, how we sort of attach sellers and what I think their phone numbers are to campaigns, and mm-hmm. either put text messages or voicemails right on their cell phone.
Dude, well, you made an awesome transition here, so let's dive right into that. So the first quick tip that we're going to give you guys and gals watching this or listening to this is on the text message side of things. So you guys may or may not have seen the different ways that people are using text messages or voice broadcasts. But Danny, why don't you dive into, you know, the next 4, 5, 6 minutes, what your strategy is, how you guys are finding these sellers, what technology you're using, why you put it in place, what's working about it, things like that. I'll turn it over to you, man. So dive into that quick tip on the text message side of things.
Sure. Well, I'll take a step back. I'm a fairly experienced landlord. I know the landlord business inside and out. I know how to talk to landlords. I know how to deal with landlords that are extremely frustrated. I myself have been extremely frustrated from time to time. So I've really attacked failure to pay rent listings here in Maryland. So, you know, each county or you know, in my case, Baltimore City has an entire database of landlords that have filed failure to pay rent notice for a tenant. And I just sort of walk into that assuming that the landlord, unless it's an institutional landlord, I sort of assume they may have an interest in selling if this whole landlord thing isn't working out for them. So attached to each of those listings is a phone number. And given you know, given technology today, I would assume that 90% of those phone numbers are text or are cell phones. So we just sort of compile all that data and we send them a quick text letting them know that you know, we understand that being a landlord isn't always fantastic, and if you're struggling and want to sell the property, we'll buy it from you. So that's sort of the first general you know, messaging or the first way. We also attack, I'm giving away all the secrets here, we also attack expired listings. It has to, you know, match a pretty strict criteria for me. I want to identify realistic-minded sellers that maybe just had a bad experience with a realtor or something. But, you know, so we'll put together lists of expired listings. You know, we'll let them know that what's the worst, you know, just we'll send a text saying basically what's the worst that can happen. I give you an offer, you say no. I mean, so that drives a lot of phone calls and a lot of text messages. And, I mean, that's beyond just some outbound campaigns to try to get a feel for whether or not people are buying or selling via text messaging. Those two campaigns have proven to be pretty successful for me.
So technology-wise, you guys are using what for technology, and how are you guys finding the phone numbers? Is it manually? You guys are compiling a list manually? Are you using something to scrape phone numbers and compile them and scrubbing them on something? It's getting kind of techy for some people listening to it, but there's all kinds of cool stuff you can do with it. As much as you feel comfortable sharing, what is the process and technology you guys use for it?
Yeah, at least in Maryland, most of the county or city databases in Maryland are some sort of SQL-based, you know, database. And it's not, you know, I have a virtual assistant I've used for years that's excellent with sort of data mining and scraping. Mm-hmm. So we'll do as much of it from a sort of an automated standpoint as possible. You know, every now and then we'll come across a database that it's kind of diving in and scraping it just isn't going to work. And I'll have someone in-house spend a couple of hours on, you know, weekly sort of gathering those phone numbers. But I look at it, you know, whether it's manual or automatic, I just want to make sure that I keep my cost consistent. You know, if I'm spending 10 or 15 bucks an hour to have someone sit at a computer, I want to make sure that produces more deals than I would if I just sent an automated postcard campaign.
Yep.
So to answer your question, a mix between you know, sitting down and manually pulling those numbers out, or sending the website to one of my programming guys and say, hey, I need a short-term temporary scraper for this specific site. Mm-hmm.
So some people might be kind of wondering. I think it's worth mentioning here as well. I know there are some laws/guidelines, you know, kind of like the email spam acts and stuff like that. Where some people say that this kind of can span over into that. Is that something you've had a chance to talk with anyone, you know, legal counsel wise, and once again, for people listening to this, none of this is legal advice or anything. This is for educational purposes only. Is that anything that you're concerned about there? Or have you guys kind of already crossed that? You guys have looked at it and you're good to go?
Well, we do. We'll scrub the phone numbers against the national do not call list. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
That's sort of the first step. I guess my methodology or my mindset is if someone has taken the time to put themselves on the do not call list, then they're probably going to take the time to file a complaint against my company for sending them a text message. So first step, as sort of a general guideline, we'll make sure that their number doesn't exist on the do not call list. Step two, I'll make sure that the text message only has to do with the topic that yielded their contact information.
Yeah.
So if it's a landlord and I think they might be interested in selling the house, I'll make sure to, specifically mention that I'm aware that they're a landlord. The way that I understand it, I have some in-house counsel here, and none of this is legal counsel, but the way I understand it, as long as the receiver of the message is able to unsubscribe in a matter of one or two clicks or messages, if you will, and my original message was on topic, then we're good. If I start gathering phone numbers from real estate databases and start sending them text messages about gym memberships, that we might have a problem.
And then you guys, for technology-wise, you guys are using CallRail, right? Is that what you mentioned you guys are using?
CallFire.
I'm sorry.
Different CallFire products. The brain, and I'm sure that your listeners know what I'm talking about, but the whole brain of this business is Podio.
Mm-hmm.
So however the data is coming to me, at some point it will end up in Podio. And then anything that's outbound will come out of Podio just as a matter of tracking and so on and so forth.
Awesome. So guys and gals, we'll kind of wrap up this tip right here, and then we'll dive into the second one, which is delegation and systems. And also a little bit on Podio, because that's what Daniel uses for helping to more easily delegate different roles in his business. But wrapping it up here, so look for different ways to connect with your sellers, buyers, what have you, whatever type of lead you're looking for. Get creative like Daniel has. And leverage technology, and just do it in a smart way, and use this tip. But like Daniel has done, make sure that you're taking those processes. You're going through the steps. If you are going to do this, run it by your own counsel. That way, you don't go back and say, "Hey, they said to do it on the podcast." Run it by your own counsel. Well, this is definitely not marketing or legal advice. And then scrub it. And there are some list scrubbing services out there that you can compare them against the do not call list. Yank those ones out there just to make sure that you're not infringing on someone if they don't want to be contacted like that. And then let it roll. And so what are you guys, in that text message, what are you guys doing as the call to action? Are you saying reply back? Are you saying call us? What are you guys doing in the text message?
In the text message, and I'm sure, if you guys end up putting together a blog, I can share exact text. I can share examples of what actually is put in there. But I'd love to drive the traffic to the Carrot website. That would make my life easier. Of course, they can call an office phone number, which is answered live by Pat Live. So the two different ways the call to action could be received by the potential seller is call my office, which goes to Pat Live, or fill out a form on the website, which goes straight to Carrot.
I love it, man. I love it. So we're going to wrap that one up. We're going to move on to number two. So delegation, as you were growing this business and you continue to grow the business, as you mentioned, looks like you guys are shooting for 40 to 50% improvement in the business this year, which is amazing. Kind of what was your process on when you knew you really needed to start to delegate? And have you gone through different kind of levels of delegation? I know with me, with Carrot and my previous businesses as well, you would initially just get the first stuff right off your lap, right? Like I'd say, let's get this off of my lap. It's the basic stuff. Then as you go, you start to learn higher level stuff to delegate. You start to bring aboard higher level people so they can really take ownership of certain things. But what has worked the best for you delegation-wise, whether that's a mindset, whether it's a process, whether it's a system that's helping you grow your business right now?
Well, you're right. There have been, there's been a sort of a gradual, I guess my journey's been sort of gradual in terms of delegation. Step one was just sort of realizing, when I got into this tax lien business and I'd look at you know, I need to do due diligence / BPOs on 300 properties. There's no way that I'd be looking at 300 properties in any given month or two or three. So that was sort of the first level to bring people on board and delegate inspections and all this sort of stuff. And that was fine. You know, I could give up the control of going and looking at houses. I'd seen enough houses in my career to not be distracted by that. But like you said, then I started getting into higher level stuff. I mean, you know, we've got a portfolio of 1,000 properties here in Baltimore. So, and the inspections is one thing. Then it just sort of came down to answering phone calls, responding to emails, actually doing BPOs, the whole nine yards. So let's take a step back to Podio, the brain. That's sort of what makes it easy for me to delegate from a technological standpoint. You know, I can easily, from the minute I wake up, I can tell everyone what their job is that day, and I can sort of set expectations. The struggle for me in delegation has been trust. I'm sort of a control freak, and I think you and I have had offline conversations about, you know, entrepreneurship and sort of that. You mentioned bottlenecking here a little bit ago with just the control. I've had this mindset since I was a little kid. If you want it done right, you have to do it yourself. And sometimes in business, things don't get done right 100% of the time. But if they get done right 95% of the time, and you have a great business and you're able to grow exponentially every year, then we're good with that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I said, different levels of delegation start with what takes the most time and what, you know, what seems to eat up the most of your schedule, and figure out a way to delegate that, and then sort of move on from there. But for me, and I'm sure with many other entrepreneurs, trusting that to whom you delegate will do it correctly is sort of a struggle sometimes. But I think, you know, a year into it, a year and a half into this business, I think we've built a pretty decent team, and as long as we, you know, keep things the way that they are, I think we'll be pretty good.
So where are you finding your people?
So say that again.
Where are you finding the people for your team to work with you?
Employees have come from business relationships that have gone well. Like, so co-wholesalers that I've done a lot of business with, or just different people in the business that I knew that wanted to be part of something bigger. That's pretty much it. I haven't yet taken the step to hire someone that has no real estate experience or no sort of small business experience, but I'm sure I'll cross that bridge soon.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as Podio goes, for those of you who are using Podio, you guys are very familiar with this. For those of you who are not, Podio is it's a CRM, but on steroids. You can basically bend it and shape it and do whatever you want to do with it. Without getting into technical stuff, because we could probably have a Podio call for hours, and I really honestly don't know much about Podio as far as the use of it. But do you guys have every one of your team members in Podio? Is it only certain people? Kind of what role does Podio play in the overall communication, working on deals between your team?
Everybody's in Podio. There's, you know, if anyone touches my business, I mean, I have title companies that have access to Podio that I work with quite a bit. And, you know, my attorney has access to Podio. So if there's any sort of issue related to any deal that we're working on, before you call me, you should probably check the file in Podio, because I guarantee you the answer's there. So that's sort of the business, or that's sort of the machine we wanted to create. And I think, you know, I think we've done a good job. Improvement exists in probably in every area of business constantly. So we'll continue to improve Podio. But for now, it's, you know, not to get too technical, like you said, but Podio can be designed. It's very robust. It can be designed in any way that you want it designed. So, you know, there are obviously different team members have different roles, and different team members have different access to different parts of the business. But like I said, almost everyone that touches Baltimore Wholesale Property has access to Podio. And like I said, if you have a question, you know, you should probably have it painted on the wall in my office. Check Podio first.
I love it, man. Dude, here's a question I'm sure some people are thinking. So on the delegation side, you mentioned how you're finding them. I mean, we find people the same way. It's, you know, we haven't found anyone by putting on a job listing. It's always been from relationships. And I've heard from other people as well that you can scale a business so far with relationships. And it's once you get up to about 20, 30 employees, that's when you have to start really getting outside of the relationships of you know, people that you know. We're not there yet. So we can probably keep on hiring from our relationships, from our team members' relationships, that kind of thing. So That's a good tip right there, guys and girls. Mind your relationships. Put out a message on Facebook. Put out an email to people. You'll be surprised who's going to jump on that opportunity to work with you. We have been. For sure, right. We've been hiring people. The next thing is mindset on helping people to make that jump. I was talking with Sharon Bornholt, a fellow Carrot customer, mixing up the words there. And this is probably 7 or 8 months ago on her podcast. And she was asking me about delegation, about hiring, and when to know to hire. Should I do a 1099, you know, contract or whatever? And I think it's not one size fits all for sure. But kind of what got you over that hump from going, okay, I'm a solo guy, to I need to hire someone. I need to hire my first employee. And I'm sure you already had contractors before then, you know, independent contractors. But what kind of took you over the hump to say, you know what, I need an employee now? And what mentally did you have to get over to realize that by taking that money and taking it out of your pocket, which you were probably, that was some of your net profit that you were taking and moving over to this employee. So during that time, you had to be okay with netting a little bit less, knowing that you're building something. But what was that mindset? And how quickly did you get over that once you hired that first person and went, shoot, should have done this a long time ago?
Well, yes, number one, I should have done it a long time ago. I've been in business for 10 years now. I've owned businesses that had 30 employees. For whatever reason, my landlording business and anything I've ever done in real estate, I've kept it very close to my chest. So, you know, I at one point I thought, you know, I might have a full-time personal assistant. But beyond answer phone calls and respond to emails and maybe reschedule appointments, what's a personal assistant going to do? And so I threw around different ideas. Ultimately, I got to the point in my real estate business where the only constraint that mattered to me was that I physically could not be in the same place or rather two places at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I mean, I was working 15-hour, 16, 17-hour days, working 7 days a week. I didn't have issues, at least in the business. You know, personally, I did have issues with time management. But in the business, I physically could get everything done. But when I got to the point where I literally just, you know, I needed to be in two different places at the same time, I decided to hire people. That's sort of what happened. Ultimately, I think I was probably at that place a year earlier, and just for whatever reason didn't take that jump. But So the mindset was, now at least looking back, of course hindsight's 20/20. Looking back, the reason I got into real estate, or really any business for myself, was so that I could completely operate the whole thing in my bathrobe from my kitchen table. And you know, it's a real simple minded thing to sort of put together, but I need to be able to do that. That needs to be a reality for me to sort of feel fulfilled in business. And that means hiring people, because I'm not, you know, like I mentioned a second ago, I'm not going to go inspect 300 properties in my bathrobe. So, you know, I think that sort of remembering why I got into the business, my free time, my flexibility, all of those things, the things that really matter, you know, making a couple hundred grand in over the course of a year or two or three, that's not why I got into real estate. I got into real estate to pretty much create my own schedule. And at a point, that's going to require me to hire people.
Dude, and one thing on that too, is kind of to help people get over that mindset of hiring the first person or the first assistant or the first independent contractor or whatever, is I was always looking at it as cutting out of our profit margin, right? And the funny thing is, every time we have found that right person for that role that we're currently bottlenecked in, our profit margin doesn't change. Sometimes it's gone up because now I'm able to focus my time doing other things that are higher value. And same thing with you on your end. You're able to plan the Florida entry. You know, you wouldn't be able to do that if you were hustling and doing everything in your business. You'd have to stay there and focus on just taking care of what you have in Baltimore. So, yeah, anyone listening to this, make sure that if you guys feel like you're bottlenecked, feel like you have way too much going on in your business, number one, pumpkin plan the heck out of that thing. Find what are your biggest pumpkins and focus on those and get rid of everything else. And then if you're still too busy, then you need to bring on team members. If you bring on the right ones, your profit margins are not going to take a hit because you're going to be able to go out there now and do the higher value stuff in the business. Dude, so third thing is, we kind of started off in mindset. You mentioned to me before you know, one big thing for you, we've already kind of touched on some of this, is the mindset of managing your business and kind of how that has evolved, you know, from when you're a solo operator to, you know, now a good solid team. And you mentioned, you manage your business not from desperation. And that phrase, when you said it, dude, it's like, man, that's, I definitely want to dive into this, because I know so many entrepreneurs, probably all of us at one point or another, have done that. I think the people who are successful recognize that they did it and then go, I can't be doing that anymore if I want to be successful. The people who aren't successful, they keep on doing that. They keep on asking why they're not seeing a different result. So how did you recognize that people managing a business from desperation, could have been you or someone you saw elsewhere? How did you recognize that, and how do you make sure in your business you're not doing that?
Oh, it was me. Most of the lessons I learned eventually. You ask some people that are close to me, sometimes they might say it takes me a while to learn a lesson. But yeah, I certainly taught myself that one. I mean, you know, there's ups and downs in almost every business. And certainly, you know, I've started a couple. Some have gone fantastic. Some I've sold for many, many multiples. And then others didn't go that well. So I've learned a lot in the last 10 years. And what I've learned is every time that I'm sort of in some sort of a rut, I guess, where I'm thinking to myself, you know, oh my gosh, I haven't closed a deal in weeks, or I haven't, you know, we haven't brought in a check in a month or two or three or whatever it is. If I allowed that sort of desperation to change how I approach the business, it never goes well. You know, whether it's, if it's in wholesaling, whether that means that I'm willing to spend more money on real estate just because I want the deal or because I feel like I need to get involved, that, you know, I haven't closed a deal in months, I need to close a deal, so I put myself in at the wrong price. I mean, again, that was exclusively from desperation, and that, you know, again, that's never ended well for me. So you have to, if you're in business for yourself, you have to trust yourself. And, you know, I think that's something that's maybe a fourth key, but you really need to trust that you know what you're doing. Hopefully you have some experience proving that you know what you're doing. Rely on that. And if you're at a point where you find yourself feeling desperate to get some deal closed or bring money in the door or whatever it is, you need to sort of take a deep breath, take a step back, and continue to do business by the rules you set, whatever that means. Hopefully you have rules related to what offers should look like. Hopefully you have rules related to what your contract should look like, what you're willing to do, what you're not willing to do. And you really need to stick with those rules. If those rules have worked in the past, then they will work in the future. And you should probably evaluate a different part of your business, not your rules. You know, whether you need to spend more time or energy or money on marketing, or you want to, you know, follow up or systems or whatever it is, there's probably some other issue. And the issue could be outside of your control. You know, but through an economic downturn, really across the country, but certainly here in sort of blue collar areas in Baltimore, and I didn't close deals for 6 months. I don't know. There was a long period of time when investment real estate wasn't doing that well.
Yeah.
That was completely outside of my control. But I, as best I could, I tried to stick with my rules, and I think I bounced back fairly well. If I had bit off at that time, if I had bit off more than I could chew as a matter of desperation, I don't know that I'd be in a position to sort of be where I am now.
And it's huge. So you mentioned two things. You mentioned having rules that you run your business by. For me, we have like non-negotiables. When I started Carrot, said, hey, I'm going to grow this business, and there's five non-negotiables, and I can't, you know, the business cannot go against any of these, otherwise I'm not going to do it. And also, right, you know, for us, of course, we have certain guidelines. Hey, these are what we'll provide a client. Here's what we can and can't do. Here's, you know, whatever, what our level of customer service needs to be, that kind of thing. For a real estate investor, and I do the same thing on my multifamily side. Like, I have to be buying at X dollars per door, or
right,
have X profit per door, you know, that kind of thing, you know, net cash flow. Kind of what kind of things do you have that are your rules that you guys run by? You mentioned offers. So your offers are done in a certain way. Are you talking like percentages? You guys won't offer more than 60% or 65%, or is it like that? Or is it something different? And then also, are you guys specifically focusing on a certain profit per deal? Hey, we're not going to do a deal if it won't net us at least over 5 or over 10. Or kind of what are some of those rules for you guys that make sure that you can grade yourself on, am I being desperate or am I just following our system?
Sure. Well, there's a couple different sides to the business here, even within Baltimore I'll sell property. So the rules are different depending on what we're doing. But, you know, in the tax lien business, we have, it's a publicly funded investment fund. So we have, you know, we have a board and we have people that really need to feel like this entire thing is transparent. So there are certainly rules related to how we put together deals in the tax lien side. But yeah, with net profit, rules related to net profit, rules related to any sort of disposition, you know, rules related to working deals out with sellers that have defaulted on whether the taxes or the note. And if, you know, the workout or the offer meets the criteria that best produces for our fund, then it's done. If it doesn't, we got to a point a couple of years ago when a rule or two would be bent here because we felt some level of compassion related to a situation. And that's not how business works. That's maybe how friendship could work, but in business, we just can't do it. So those rules have really sort of tightened in the last 18 months, 2 years. And, it's been helpful for me. It alleviates a lot of stress on my end. And then on the wholesale side, the wholesale real estate business, I'm sure a lot of people can appreciate this. If you're evaluating a single deal and there's comps all over the place, one thing that I think people have made the mistake in wholesalers, I guess, or contract assigners have made the mistake of doing is if they really want a deal bad enough, they'll sort of look at what the higher comps are and sort of evaluate the situation based on maybe the top three comps instead of the median three comps.
Trying to justify it, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're desperate and you're looking at the average of maybe the top 30%, then that's challenging. And then you're not desperate and you're looking at the median of the, 50% and under. Just set a rule and do it. You know it's going to work. If it is working, just refine the rules and move on. So with offers, certainly. With buyers, I deal with, you see just the traffic on my website. So I've got a database of 8,000 cash buyers here in the Maryland area. And, let's just say 4,000 of them are tire kickers and 4,000 of them have some involvement in real estate. And then maybe 500 of them have done a deal in the last 6 months, mm-hmm. Which is probably about the makeup of my buyers list. And so I have hundreds of conversations with buyers, every week probably. Someone on my team does. And of course, buyers are looking out for their best interest, and buyers are sort of putting together contracts that make the most sense for them, and that's fine. As a buyer, I would do the same thing, but as a seller, I really have to create rules that protect my interest. So, we have contracts that are designed perfectly, 30 days with 10-day extensions and maybe a 15-day extension if certain criteria is met. That's it. There's no, there's no sort of tugging at the heartstrings conversations about, can you give me another couple of weeks? It's just, we don't do business that way. And that's really refined our buyers list. We haven't had a whole lot of deals go sideways as a result of rules, but we have built a stronger buyers list because of rules.
Yeah, they know they need to act. They know they need to close when they say they are. They have that fear of losing the deal because they know that you guys are going to stick to your rules, which is amazing. So that's a huge tip, guys and gals listening or watching this, is come up with whatever your rule guidelines are going to be for your offers, for your profit, if you're doing multifamily or storage, for your revenue or profit per door. Whatever those rules are, come up with them, put them on paper, put them in stone, actually, and roll with them. And make sure, like Daniel said, you're not bending those rules and coming from the side of desperation in your business. It just doesn't lead you down a good path. So, dude, we're going to close this up. But before we do, I'm going to throw a couple quick questions at you. One of our core values here at Carrot, I'm looking at our core values post right now, actually, is constant and never-ending incremental improvement. And I know you are that same way, too. So what are you reading right now that you enjoy, that you're getting something out of? And also, who are you following right now? Are you following any certain CEOs? Are you following any certain person that is kind of inspiring you or helping to guide what you're doing in business?
That's a great question, and I've been, this is tax season for me, and the last three months or so, I haven't had a whole lot of time to do what I'd like to do, which is sort of take a break and do some reading. So right now I'm sort of reading tax bills, but you know, give me
that's rousing reading right there.
Right, give me a month or two, and I'll probably be back on my bookshelf. There's some stuff that you know that I've definitely been looking at. I won't do any recommending until I sort of go through it. But
yeah.
You know, I'm excited to maybe the next time you and I talk, I'll be able to give you a report on something great that I read recently. And just in terms of who I'm following, this has very little to do with real estate in the grand scheme, but I think I've been very impressed with a guy here in Baltimore named Kevin Plank, the CEO of Under Armour.
Oh, dude. He's
the guy
amazing.
Owns a ton of real estate in Baltimore. He's made some really interesting real estate purchases that a year or two ago didn't make any sense to me, and he's doing some big things both as a team leader, as a CEO of one of the greatest apparel companies built in the last 10 years, and he's also investing in Baltimore in a big way. So that's been an interesting story for me. Met with the guy a couple of times, and so there's that sort of personal connection.
Yeah.
I'm interested in seeing what he does with the dramatically undervalued real estate that he purchased.
Dude, that's amazing. So guys and guests, if you aren't following Kevin Plank in any given way, I mean, do it. There's an amazing article. He was actually the cover of Inc. magazine this last month or the month before. Great, great feature in there about the way that he's really growing his business. And he's taking some big risks, which is really cool because you can't make big wins unless you guys take big risks. But also on that, you guys have to mitigate those risks so you're not betting the whole farm and it's either a lose or win kind of thing. So make sure you read that article. Follow Kevin Plank if you guys want to see someone doing amazing things. And Daniel, thanks for hopping on the First Carrot Cast with us and sharing those tips with us, man. If anyone wants to connect with you, where do they go? Where do they find you?
I mean, Facebook might be best. Just facebook.com/Baltimore Wholesale Property, or just I'm sure maybe we'll link to my profile or something. Of course, BaltimoreWholesaleProperty.com, and just connect with me, email me, or fill out the contact request, whatever it is, and I'll get back to you right away.
Beautiful. Well, thanks, Daniel. Have an awesome rest of the week, man. And everyone listening to this call, make sure you go to oncarrot.com/blog. And if you are not yet, you can subscribe to our blog. You can subscribe to this new podcast we have going and see what else we've got out there. And keep an eye out for bits and pieces of this being rolled out on our blog here for the next few months. And go out there and crush it, guys. Go out there, find what you believe in, find what you really, really want to do in life and make an impact in life. Build a business around it and leverage real estate in that business. You know, real estate's an amazing, amazing asset and tool to do that. So go out there, make your dreams come true with business. Daniel, thanks for coming on, man. We'll talk later.
Thanks, Trevor.
Thanks.